Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. My name is Dan Wilson, and on today's episode, part one of my two-part conversation with Alex Carr of The Good Fight. If you follow him on Twitter or you had the opportunity to read his work, you know he does a great job keeping up and covering this Phillies team. And he's also got interesting backstory of how he got into baseball. He's originally from England, doesn't have much of an accent, you'll notice. I do ask him about that throughout the course of the interview, more so in part two, but I'll tease it just a little bit right now. But really interesting guy to talk to. We talked a lot about, obviously, the news from earlier in the week as it pertains to Dick Allen, him having his number retired earlier this year. Does that give him one final push into a Hall of Fame case? What even makes a Hall of Famer? All that and more on the upcoming episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. So here it is, my conversation with Alex Carr. Joining us on today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast, it is, you may know his work from Twitter and The Good Fight, where he is a writer. We have Alex Carr. Alex, how are you doing today?
I am doing just lovely, sir. Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here.
That's great to hear. So a number of things I want to get to on the podcast today. We were briefly talking just before we began recording. I will start with the news from yesterday, though. Dick Allen passes away at the age of 78. Of course, the Phillies retired his number just 3 months ago. He has a borderline Hall of Fame case, in my opinion. He is someone who is going to have to wait at least another year to get into the Hall of Fame by virtue of the Golden Era Committee. What do you know about Dick Allen? How much have you kind of written or covered him? And do you think he has a legitimate Hall of Fame case?
Yeah, so, you know, you and I were just talking about this pre-pod before we hit the record button, as it were. Both of us were relatively young guys. We never really got the pleasure of seeing Dick Allen play. From what I know and from what I've researched and from what I've been able to read over the last few days and months, is, you know, he's obviously, he had his number retired and he's been honored in various ways. And, you know, that stuff will continue to surface as people push for his Hall of Fame career, as they should. But from what I know about him, primarily, it's that, first of all, he was one of those guys that plays as hard as you can. I mean, he's one of those guys that you look at, he's always given 110%, always nose to the grindstone, you know, just going for it. And that's always something that you have to respect. But I mean, for me, when I look at his numbers and I kind of mull over the whole Hall of Fame case thing, you know, we look at a whole bunch of guys that make their way into the Hall of Fame because they had these short stints of just greatness. You know, there are, I would struggle to come up with a particular example at the current moment, but it's, you know, these guys that have had maybe, you know, and by short stints, I obviously mean 8 to 10 year span, like spans of just wonderful numbers and, you know, putting up a whole bunch of WAR from either in the field or at the plate. And, you know, when you look at Dick Allen's repertoire, you see just consistency, 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 consistency. And he's one of those guys that did have, one of those 8 to 10 year spans. I think he maybe had like a 9 year span where he was hitting consistently, you know, like
it was like 11. I looked into it. Yeah. It was like an 11 year span.
Oh, was it?
Consistency.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So see, he's even better than the,
he's on the long end of that short stint thing. Yeah,
exactly. So but you know, it's one of those things where you look at this guy's numbers and you see high OBP numbers as well as big power numbers, as well as high slugging. I mean, obviously I remember when they were retiring his number, they had a ceremony at the park, and I didn't get to go. I'm really miffed that I didn't get to go. But it's, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of, you hear about this thing. And so you go back, you look at the numbers in retrospect to see, you know, well, why are we retiring this guy's number? I mean, OPS numbers in the ones in like 5 seasons, slugging percentages in the 600s, like maybe even like 700, maybe not, but it, you know, I don't have his baseball reference in front of me, but these huge, huge numbers that you can just, you know, you gawk at, you know, that those are numbers that, you know, guys like Freddie Freeman put up nowadays. And you know, I think everybody thinks that Freddie Freeman's going to be a Hall of Famer one day, even though, you know, he's been playing the game of baseball. What is he, 31 now? So he's played for 10 years. But, you know, he is one of those guys that if he drops off, I think he'll still be considered, you know, one of the greatest players of the last decade, and therefore will probably get a bit of a bump in a Hall of Fame case. So you look at Dick Allen and you just realize how unbelievably underrated this guy was. I think he had somewhere around the 350s in home runs, you know, big, big numbers for, like you said, an 11-year span. So I think, and I'm not sure what his total career WAR is. I can't tell you that off the top of my head, but I can tell you that, you know, somebody who gives their all to this game and puts up numbers like he did, I think personally totally deserves to be in the Hall.
His career WAR, if I'm not mistaken, I forget exactly what it is, but it's according to Baseball Reference, which of course is B WAR, I think it was right around the 58 mark, which is higher than that of someone like Hank Greenberg and David Ortiz, who Hank Greenberg right. already in the Hall of Fame. Ortiz, I think, is thought of as a Hall of Famer. Of course, there's some steroid concerns early in his career, but if you were just looking numbers wise, like right. he probably gets in.
Yeah, I think you're totally right.
So
yeah, and with Dick Allen, it's one of those things where he just seems to be one of those guys that was universally beloved in this game. And I feel like there's something to be said for that. I mean,
beloved maybe now, that, not at the time, unfortunately.
Right. Correct. But you see the reflections in the media are very telling of the, you know, the kind of player he is looked back as. And I think there's something to be said for that. And I know that we're not supposed to let personal opinions get in the way of a Hall of Fame case. And I'm very guilty of that. I won't go into detail, but I'm very guilty of that with some of the players that are coming to, you know, that are on the ballot this year. And, you know, I think that there is definitely something to be said when so many people have such wonderful things to say about a person. Especially when you're looking at their career in retrospect, I think that speaks volumes.
I know you mentioned you just didn't want to get into it, and I won't make you name names, but okay, so how much should it matter? Because again, we weren't alive at the time, and I wasn't, you know, baseball was obviously covered very differently, and the way people treated people and thought about people was very differently at the time. It seems to me like it very well could have been a classic case of not being well liked, and that works against you for a guy whose numbers aren't like a shoe-in first ballot Hall of Fame case. Like, should we evaluate, are they a Hall of Fame person with their numbers? Because you could be a jerk, but if you're the best player ever, you get away with it. If you're a borderline guy and you're not such a nice person, then you don't get in. Meanwhile, if you're slightly worse than your borderline, you were well respected, treated the media well, then you get the votes. Like, should that really be factored into the equation? I don't really think it should be, unless it's actually hurting or helping your team.
It is so hard. I feel like, you know, I feel like when you're a better person, when you go out of your way and you do good things, you get noticed more, right? Like, you become more popular. And I feel like popularity, that certainly plays. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen
it does.
With the evolution of yes and no. Okay. That's my thing. So yes, in that, I'm going to name names, 'cause why not?
Go ahead.
If you're Curt Schilling, you know, you kind of, go out of your way to assert yourself as this not great person. And you know, people call you out for it.
That's putting it lightly. Yeah. He's not a Hall of Fame person, but he was good at baseball.
There are words that I could say, but you know, you go out of your way to, you know, people call you out for being a jerk, and you embrace it and you say, yeah, I am a jerk. Yeah. I do believe these things. Yeah. You know, there's not even an ounce of like regret or, you know, I want to redeem myself or, you know, whatever. So that sucks. And you don't want to, reward somebody like that with, eternal enshrinement in, you know, what is considered probably the greatest honor in all of baseball. Now, if you're Barry Bonds, who was not nice to media, probably couldn't give two shits about the media, excuse my language. Like, you know, he did not care one bit, but he is quite possibly the greatest baseball player to ever touch the diamond. I mean, then, despite the cheating and the whatever, there's got to be a certain, you know, it's hard to evaluate because, yes, great players are great players, but when you stain your reputation, is that worth rewarding? So it's a really tough thing. I feel like what they should do is, you know, nationally recognize some metric like WAR, like, I don't know, or create their own. And if a player meets that threshold, then there's no voting, there's no whatever. I mean, this isn't what they should do. This is something they could do. If a player meets that threshold, then they get an honor of some sort. But I feel like the Hall of Fame is supposed to be a reward for being a great person of baseball as a player and as a human being. I don't know. I feel like
it's not really explicitly defined.
No, you're totally right. And there are so many terrible people that have made their way into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, again, that's, it's, as you mentioned, the standards have changed. Our values as human beings have shifted, especially with the age of social media. But, it's hard to say. It's really hard for me because I will be the first person to admit this, and I don't get a ballot. They should not give me a ballot. I let personal, you know, influence, you know, factor into my decisions. I just do. I would never, ever, ever check Curt Schilling's name on a Hall of Fame ballot. I would not. But, you know, there are probably other people out there that have done really horrible, like, I'm sure Barry Bonds has done some horrible things, but would I check his name on a Hall of Fame ballot? Yeah, I would. I'm sure Roger Clemens has done some horrible things, or maybe not, I don't know. But I would check his name on a Hall of Fame ballot. I'm sure Scott Rolen maybe isn't the greatest person. I would check his name on a Hall of Fame ballot. Todd Helton, he's a really nice guy, but I'd check his name on a Hall of Fame ballot. It's really, really hard for me, to speak on that, just because I do, what I love about baseball is that I believe that it's a great game to have outreach, you know, to go out, because you get paid so much freaking money. You can go out and make a difference, especially during the offseason and even during the season. And we saw that with the Phillies. I mean, Didi Gregorius was out there every weekend doing something different to help bolster the community. You know, as was Bryce Harper, as was JT Realmuto. And, you know, I'm not sure how those guys are in their personal lives. But what I do know is that they make an effort. And
at least
so,
publicly they did.
Anyway,
yes.
Yes. And that is my long-winded way of saying I shouldn't be the one to decide these things. And I'm sure there are so many people that disagree with me. And that's okay, because I don't get a ballot and I don't have a say.
So I'm glad. I'm glad you can at least acknowledge your personal bias against certain things. And it's also funny. Yeah. So I think with the Curt Schilling argument, I think there's a product. I think he's a good example. I think he's a product of a few things. Number one is, you know, some people make it about certain players are more outspoken about their political beliefs than others. I trying to stay away from it. I think some of what he says goes beyond just politics, but that's an argument for another day.
Yes.
If you're a good or bad person, much of what he said and much of the reputation that he's built for himself, at least today, has been post playing career. Like, if you polled people, what do you think of Curt Schilling the day he walked off a baseball field for the first time, it would be much more positive, I would suspect, than it is today. So can you actually undo your Hall of Fame case post-playing career is like another aspect to this. And of course, he played in an era before social media, before he decided to become as outspoken as he is. I don't know what he was like in the locker room. Go interview his teammates. He might have been a great guy, like for the Red Sox or the Phillies, whoever. I don't know. And it's a weird for the Diamondbacks. Like, he helped them win a World Series. In two different instances, in like this century alone. So I don't know how much it should have to do with it after the fact. I understand your thing of like, it's supposed to be this hall of excellence that represents the best that baseball has to offer, whether it be playing off the field, on the field. I think another thing is take someone who plays in a big market versus a small market. Like Derek Jeter obviously benefited from being the everyday shortstop for the Yankees. If he had the same career in Arizona or Milwaukee, there's no way he's as beloved as he is. Like there just isn't. So how much does that count? How much does winning count in a sport where, you know, one player doesn't make the whole team? When Mike Trout's career is said and done, barring something totally unforeseen, I think he's a pretty well-liked guy, but probably is not going to play on that many winning teams, but puts up incredible numbers. Yeah. Like, you know, what if he goes AWOL in his post, you know, after his career? I don't know. Like, where does the line get drawn? I think it's an interesting just hypothetical that no one really knows the answer to. And to your point,
it is fascinating.
Mariano, like, yeah. I always said, like, we're talking about shoo-in Hall of Famers. Mariano Rivera was the first guy ever to get every Hall of Fame vote. Like literally the first, someone didn't vote for Babe Ruth. I don't know if they had a personal problem with him. Like maybe he was a jerk. And by the way, Mariano Rivera, I know he's a closer, so it's going to be different. But if we're using WAR as the metric, also has a lower career WAR than Dick Allen. And he was the first guy ever to get it unanimous. I know he's a closer and it's different.
Two different. Yeah.
But
that's it. What you bring up is really actually really interesting because it's that Mike Trout kind of enigma is going to be so fascinating to watch play out as we age into our 40s and 50s and et cetera. Because, you know, you've got the best player in baseball consensus, like the best player in ages, the likes of which we haven't seen in 50, 60, 70 plus years. So, I mean, it's pretty crazy to see this guy who has, you know, everybody has his name in their mouths, but he doesn't really take to the, you know, to the front page.
He's not a modern athlete. I don't think
not a modern superstar. He's not.
He's not a modern superstar. You could go. What percentage of people would you suspect? I had Joe Giglio on this podcast last week, and he had a theory that I thought was interesting. What percentage of American sports fans do you think have ever watched Mike Trout play a full game?
It's way lower
than it should be. Like it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Mike Trout play maybe like six or seven full baseball games, and that's only because the Mariners and the Angels always play, and they're always on at 10 p.m.
They're in the same division, and they play. For an East Coast audience, he plays late at night. He doesn't get a lot of national TV games. And if he does, it's purely to show him. It's not because the Angels are in a playoff race. He's played in three ever postseason games. And he bats four or five times.
Right. It's a really interesting, you know, topic because we don't know how much career WAR he's going to end up with. We don't know if he'll win a World Series. But what we do know is he's, you know, if you showed a random person on the street a picture of Mike Trout, they won't know probably who he is.
He's just a random looking guy who puts up Hall of Fame level individual statistics. And that's like what he does.
Remember like back in the day when Aaron Judge was like first came up and was hitting tank after tank after tank and people took to the streets of New York and Aaron Judge himself interviewed them.
Yeah. That was on Jimmy Fallon or something like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, and that's just because baseball does a terrible job of exposing itself. But
I would suspect that's a little different now, by the way, because he does play in New York and it's been some years.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like it was early and it was kind of a funny thing for late night TV. But to your point, Mike Trout plays in the secondary team still in an LA market and still no one would know.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Dan Wilson here from the Locked On Phillies podcast, and I wanted to tell you about the Locked On MLB podcast. Join walking baseball encyclopedia Paul Francis Sullivan, and please call him Sully, every day on Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors both present and past, featuring exciting guest interviews, routine check-ins from the Locked On MLB Network's team of local experts, and insightful analysis on the day's biggest stories. Locked On MLB is the single best source for daily baseball talk. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.
But like, imagine, you know, when LeBron James first started making waves, imagine LeBron going out in public and asking people, you know, do you like LeBron James? They would know instantly.
And the guy came straight out of high school. And by the way, it would be even more people who know him today because he didn't even grow up in an era of social media. Like, he was too old for it.
Precisely. Precisely. So it's like, you know, it is a real, it's a fascinating thing because we'll see when the time comes if Mike Trout will be unanimous. Because if it does come down to popularity, I think Junior is, you know, the most popular guy to ever play the game. I mean, he was the most recognizable athlete during his, you know, first 6 or 7 or 8 years. You know, first baseball player to ever get a shoe. First, you know, just a whole, he was huge. And I guarantee he was recognizable. And even he wasn't unanimous. I mean, it is so, I don't know. And I think the only reason that Mariano Rivera was unanimous was because that's as good as you get. You don't get better than Mariano Rivera.
Relievers, we see it still, are they're like stocks, and 1 year they're up, 1 year they're down. And he did it in the toughest place to do it, on many winning teams for the Yankees, and like was always good. And he did it with one.
Shout out to Trevor Hoffman.
Go Trevor Hoffman, a solid number two who was hidden in San Diego. Like it but again, what percentage of people like Trevor Hoffman's number two? And if it weren't for Mariano Rivera, is phenomenal. What percentage of people, like, the drop off from popularity and knowledge of Mariano Rivera to Trevor Hoffman because of where they played, the winning teams they played on, it is incredible.
Precisely. Yeah. It's crazy. And we're seeing it with the DH too. I mean, a lot of people refuse to vote for the designated hitters of the world when Edgar Martinez is just like, you know, was such a brilliant offensive force. And I'm sure David Ortiz is going to get more votes because, you know, I guess we're getting more modern and David Ortiz is just,
we're
like
getting
such
more
a
modern. It's less
baseball,
but that I think actually helps Dick Allen in that we're getting more modern, less.
Oh, totally.
Like, the compiler stats are eventually just going to go away. First, no one's going to get to 300 wins anymore. I think most people realize how dumb of a stat wins is anyway, but even if it was a good one, no one's getting there because it just frankly won't happen. Number two, the 500 home runs and the 3000 hit marks, which are like the traditional ones. I mean, you could be Albert Pujols and hit 20 home runs a year and just be awful for the Angels in the latter half of a contract. Is that really better than having a solid prime? And I think it's starting to shift into, you know, how long your prime was. Maybe I think there is some sort of a balance. I think sustained excellence is key, but again, to compare another pitcher to it, Sandy Koufax was really good for like 6 years.
Yeah. I mean, well,
you know,
more than really good. I mean, he was
like the best, like, you know, unhittable, but it wasn't for some long 20-year career. Like, he did it for half a decade, you know? There's levels to it. It seems kind of arbitrary. And also, one more thing I wanted to hit on before we move off from the Hall of Fame discussion.
No, keep going. Yeah. I love it.
So the Golden Era Committee, which is what would bring Dick Allen back, not meeting this year due to the pandemic. I understand it's probably a group of older guys on that, but how ridiculous is that? That they, like, no one can set up a Zoom call.
They can't just join a Zoom call.
Like,
I can't believe it.
And I thought it was really unfortunate that, and I was going to actually complain about it before Dick Allen died. Like, this guy is, who knows how much time he has left. Unfortunately, you know, he passes away yesterday. And you're going to make someone like him wait another year because you don't want to hop on a Zoom call. So like, his next chance to get in is a year from now as a result of that. And now you might have another instance of another common thing we see when it comes to the Hall of Fame is, it's unfortunate, but when someone passes away, sometimes they get more traction because their name's like back. And we'll see how that works with it being a year removed where people are at on Dick Allen then. But I think the fact that Middleton basically makes the decision to break the Phillies' unwritten rule and retire his number without having been in the Hall of Fame, and the fact that he passed away, he might get in. And he was only a vote short 6 years ago. Like, he really could do it now. And it's unfortunate that he won't
really
see it.
I think that's really important too, that you bring that up, not only the breaking of the unwritten rule, but also, you know, there are probably so many, baseball players out there that have just gone unlooked, that, you know, we will never look back on because their time has passed. And it's really a shame, but I am very glad that that unwritten rule has been broken, because there is no way in a million years that Ryan Howard will ever be a Hall of Famer, but he sure as shoot should be a
no one should wear number six again, or like no one should wear number 26 again.
Nobody should wear number 11 again.
And no one should wear number 11. And because when you have a team, sorry to cut you off, but when you have a team,
keep going.
Two World Series ever, has the most losses of any franchise in professional sports. I mean, let's call it what it is. The Phillies' history as a franchise is not good. You can't
be that. We're the sewer drain, baby.
Like, you're not the Yankees. Retire these guys' numbers. Like, they might not get recognized in Cooperstown, but in terms of the Phillies, if you want to recognize excellence within the history of the organization, they're there. And
absolutely,
you know, do it. Just
and,
do it.
And there's a case for, you know, there's a case for Chase and J-Roll, but I mean,
Chase Utley, by the way, another like short prime kind of guy.
Right. But here's that. So I feel like I'm going to keep bringing new things up, but here's the difference between a guy like Chase Utley and a guy like Jeff Kent. Jeff Kent, known, not nice person. Chase Utley, beloved by every single person except for Mets fans. I mean, people are favoring Chase Utley's Hall of Fame career over Jeff Kent's because I don't know. Because
he's a hard-nosed, hardworking player that everybody loves, right? Know. Sure.
But
if Chase Utley started going off the rails with political takes now, like, he would lose steam. He would.
God forbid. It's fine. But then it's like, you know, you look at, people are starting to make Hall of Fame cases for Andrelton Simmons. I mean, it is, and shout out to Bailey of Foolish Baseball, by the way, because, you know, I chat with him sometimes just about that kind of thing. And he made a whole video devoted to Andrelton Simmons and his Hall of Fame case. And it's so weird to see a defense first, you know, kind of meager bat shortstop getting attention like that. Where, you know, in the past, we absolutely would not have seen anything like that for any, you know, guy that couldn't hit 300, you know. Well, Andrelton Simmons has hit 300, but you know what I mean? Like, who couldn't put up those eye-popping numbers directly on the stat
sheet? He's not a consistent hitter. He's stayed in the big league because of his glove.
But wow, he's been amazing defensively across his career. Anyway.
Moving off from the Hall of Fame.
Moving on. Exactly.
We could have this all day. I wanted to reference a tweet you had yesterday where you said that you're not as excited as you usually would be for the winter meetings. Understandably so. How much of that is the fact that they're not in person and it's Zoom, and how much of that is because the Phillies are the Phillies?
Probably a mix of both. But as somebody who loves, just like, I am a person who loves action in baseball. I love trades. I love, you know, blockbusters. I'm pretty sure everybody does. I love even the weirdest free agent signings. You know, I just love that stuff. Especially when it's like bad players. I just love bad players. But I think a lot of it has to do with just the monsoon of bad PR the Phillies are getting lately. I mean, it is so much worse than I've ever seen it. And as somebody who kind of, I don't even know what to call it, but I built a platform, I suppose, on positivity. It is impossible for anybody to remain positive under what has transpired over the last 2 weeks. I mean, it is a mess. It's a nightmare.
You're not, they wouldn't trade Zach Wheeler for Babe Ruth, Alex. Like, come on, get hyped.
I think that, I really feel, I can't lie, I feel for Reds fans right now, because the Reds made some absolutely fantastic acquisitions last year, both in free agency and in trade, and are now just flushing it. They are flushing it. And it is so unfortunate because, you know, there are a lot of people out there that say that baseball is business. And while I totally understand what they mean by that, and I think they are correct in some respect, baseball is also a game. Games are meant to be fun, and they're meant to be played, and meant to be played the right way. And treating a baseball team as a business decision is a silly thing to do, because your business depends on how well your team plays. And if your team plays poorly, your business is bad. And if your business is bad, you don't spend money. And if you don't spend money, you're not going to win, especially if you are the Phillies. Like,
or a pandemic hits and a billionaire owner who's worth $3.4 billion, you know, he just can't afford these tough times we're having. It's just really unfortunate.
Yeah, but you know what? I bet John Middleton's personal assets are doing just fine.
No, and I'm totally being sarcastic.
Oh, I absolutely, I clocked that a mile away. But I think it's so frustrating for everybody who is, you know, a fan of a baseball team that is not taking this free agency period or this offseason in general seriously. I just feel, and the Phillies just happen to be taking the brunt of that. You know, there are so many teams out there that are quietly, you know, trying to get rid of as much payroll as they possibly can. And you know, it is so disheartening to see the game that I am so in love with and that I've loved for so long be referenced as just a money game. It is so upsetting, because it didn't used to be that way. And that is why I feel so many people have fallen out of love with it. Because, you know, when Pete Rose signed his, what's the figure? Like $4 million extension, the biggest baseball contract in the history of baseball contracts, $4 million. That was like, what, 40, 50 years ago? It shouldn't have changed this much, where now
we give that, you know, to Scott Kingery. You know, it's
exactly, it's a lot that's different. Considered a bargain for 1 year. I mean, it is so, so it's a culmination of things, right? It's a culmination of, I'm finally realizing how just sad of a state baseball is in. I'm also just realizing how sad of a state the Phillies are in. I'm also just realizing how sad of a state the world is in, because there's a pandemic going on and everybody's feeling the effects of it. And it just, it all sucks. And it would be really nice to see my favorite baseball team go out and get the free agent that I want them to get, or make a trade that I think they'd actually are going to win, or, you know, get me excited in some way. Because yes, it's my job to, you know, critique and look at the Phillies under a microscope, and even the smallest little transaction, I have to pay attention to it. But the fan in me wants just a little bit of a reassuring move that, yeah, we're not dead. You know, not all is lost. And I haven't gotten that. I've gotten the opposite of that over the last 2 weeks. And I am very disappointed that that is the way that things are trending. But until they enter next season with a terrible squad on paper, at least, I'm not giving up hope. But it is very disheartening.
I frankly take issue with the fact that you said that you're not excited about this Phillies team based on the moves from the last 2 weeks. I'm not sure if you heard, but Vince Velasquez is coming back. And I just don't know how you can overlook such a move.
Have you seen his peripherals? He improved everything last year. I'm so excited.
You know, I can't wait for spring training when he says that he's in the best shape of his career and that he's ready to take a big step this season. In year, what are we, 7-6, something like that?
Yeah, it's gotta be 7 Phillies. Now, which is
they did it in December of 2015. So,
It's six.
Yeah, so this will be year 6. So, you know, 5-year sample size, not quite enough. You know, he's still going to get that rotation spot.
That'll do it for part 1 of my conversation with Alex Carr. Stay tuned for part 2.